One.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am your host today, Alex Clark. Joining me as always, the co-host that got the most drive, and right now are here live, my buddies Ryan Splashpots and Matthias Altman-Kurosaki. My main men, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
I'm roasting hot. It's not because of those bars Alex just dropped, although they were hot. It's about 19 degrees here in Falls Church, Virginia, and it feels like I'm sitting the Wrigley Field bleachers in direct sunlight. And yeah, how are you guys doing?
So basically, it's like my experience at the Angels game a couple months ago when I forgot to put sunscreen on and was sitting in the fourth row down the right field line and looked like a tomato after the game because I was just note to all of our listeners, wear sunscreen. That's what I'm going to say. But I'm doing just fine. It was pretty nice out today. I had off from work, so that's good. Shout out, happy Juneteenth, everybody. So yeah, I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to this week of baseball, and I'm always happy to talk about baseball. So let's do this thing.
Definitely. And don't worry, you can just tell people that you didn't forget your sunscreen. You're just trying to show more representation to the Angels. No, anyway.
Yeah, sure.
100%. Anyway, I'm doing all right over here. My last day before I go back to work after I was on a bit of a hiatus from it. So I finally get to start making a paycheck again, which is always quite delightful. But with that being said, we're going to get right on to the show. Debuting now a brand new segment called Serious or Delirious. We have three statements in front of us, and one about a pitcher, about a hitter, and one about a team itself. And we have to kind of figure out, are these takes serious or are they delirious? So I'll start out with the first one, and then we can go roundtable trying to figure out what we think on this. We'll start out with the team one here. The Cincinnati Reds have been on an absolute tear over the last while. The take is, do they will win the NL Central? Guys, serious or delirious?
Yeah, I'm going serious on this one. So there's a couple of factors to this. One of them is that the NL Central is very weak this year. The Pirates got out of the gates hot, then cooled off, then caught fire a little bit again. Now they're on a losing streak again. Then you go ahead and look at the Brewers, who got out of the gates hot too. And they've also been very inconsistent. The Reds, meanwhile, have been the best team in the division since late April. Plus, they've called up their young guys, like Matt McClain, like Elly De La Cruz, and then they've had, Spencer Steer's been great at first base. Plus, Joey Votto just came back. Also, Will Benson's been really good lately. And while their pitching staff is a bunch of projects, I would say, like Nick Lodolo, although he's injured, or and Graham Ashcroft, who's also injured right now, and then you have Hunter Green, who's also, high strikeouts guy, needs to work on the command a little bit. But I think this is a team that is ready to win now, especially in this week of a division. I'd say they're kind of like the Guardians last year, a year ahead of schedule in their rebuild. The kids are up and ready to play. I'm saying this is a serious take.
I'm also going to say this is serious, but one thing you didn't mention was the relievers for the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, yeah.
Go on Baseball Reference right now and go to a certain page called 2023 Major League Baseball Team Statistics. Guess who leads the majors in win average for relievers? Yes, the Cincinnati Reds pitching in the smallest ballpark in the history of humanity, which is basically Coors, but at sea level. Also, you can hit home runs into Kentucky. Shout out to Adam Dunn. This is just a fun team to watch. They should be at the top of MLB TV watch lists, just from top to bottom, from the lineup to the rotation to the bullpen. You have Alexis Diaz down. He's been great this season. You have the star you mentioned, Hunter Green, although he's on the IL now. Ashcraft has been great. Lodolo has, some filthy stuff. Have core, Elly De La Cruz, Matt McClain, Spencer Steer. The outfielders are fun. And guess what? The ballpark they play in, conducive to scoring runs. If you like fun baseball, go ahead, watch the Reds. I think it's a reasonable take. I think it's a serious take. My buddy actually had them at plus 2350 to win the NL Central a few weeks ago. They entered play today, half game behind the Brewers. They're red hot. No pun intended.
So for Mac here, real quick to you, is what's it? Where's the easier runs at right now? Great American Ballpark or Costco headquarters parking lot?
That's a good question. Honestly, Great American Ballpark is right up there with Costco for it easiest really ballpark to score runs to hit home runs in.
For those of you that don't know, there's an MLB The Show created stadium that people have been using called Costco headquarters that is legal to use in online play. Tournament play, and it's like what two fifty to left field, something like that. Anyway, yeah. Regardless of that, I'm going to go serious, but I'm not 100% sold even on myself saying that. I agree right now. Their pitching has been surprisingly good. We take a look at who they have. There's a few guys that I would not have been expecting to be doing as well. They haven't. Graham Ashcraft. And Alexis Diaz has been playing well, all this fun stuff anyway. But I look at this, and I think the reason why I'm calling it serious is I look at the rest of the division. And the division is pretty weak, guys. We've got Milwaukee at the lead at the current moment with a 37-34 record. They're actually tied with Cincinnati as of the recording of this. Then you have Pittsburgh, who's at 34-37. You have the Cubs, who are 34-38. And the Cardinals were 30-43. So, honestly, it's not going to be hard to win that division. And if you have this kind of spark going on right now, stretching out some wins, getting on a couple of streaks here and there, that's going to really go a long way towards winning the division. Do I think this team could win, like, say, the AL East or the AL West? No, I don't think so. But in the division that they're at right now, I'm going to serious for now. But we've also seen a few times this year where teams hit Pirates and stupidly hot and then cooled off and now completely irrelevant again. So 100% sold, but I could be. With that, let's go on to our second serious or delirious topic where we're going to move on to a hitter now as Luis Arias. We've been talking about him a lot lately, and there's a good reason for that. He just recently got back up to hitting 400 after a 5-day. So, fellas, I want to ask you here. This is a bit more of a long-term take. I get it. And honestly, this is maybe the closest one we get to truly serious. But Luis Arias will hit 400-plus by the end of the season. Is that serious or is that delirious?
This is a very difficult one because I want to say it's serious. He's back up to 400 after today's five-hit effort. It's his second five-hit effort in the past week. It's his third five-hit effort in the month of June. He actually hit a home run recently, his second homer of the year. The reason I can't really give him this, though, is that his StatCast page is just – it blows my mind. It defies analytics. There's so much blue on it. He doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't hit the ball in the air a ton. But his expected batting average is still in the 99th percentile. It's 331. Yeah, so his batted ball data in a lot of ways is worse than it was last year. But his expected batting average is over 50 points higher, is around 50 points higher. So, you know, he's only striking out 5% of the time. He's barely whiffing. However, I have to go with delirious here. I just can't see him necessarily keeping this pace up over the course of an entire season. But to me, it's just impressive that we are in mid-June right now, and we're talking about the possibility of a guy hitting 400 again.
Yeah, so one fun thing about this, before I take my slide here, you know what the last player to go this far into the season hitting 400 was? Do either of you know?
Is it John Olerud? Or, oh, wait.
It is not John Olerud.
Ichiro?
It is not Ichiro.
It's Chipper Jones, I'm pretty sure.
It is Chipper Jones. 2008 through 73 teams game through 73 team games, he was hitting 400 for the Braves. He settled in at 360 the season. So with the rise, why does he defy StatCast? It's because of the power of the line drive. And there's a fascinating article on Baseball Savant right now. How do you defend a 400 hitter? Well, with Arias, you can't really defend him because he is hitting so many balls everywhere. Go on his Baseball Savant page. His spray chart is everywhere. Everywhere there's a spot of grass, there's a hit, unless that's exactly where the fielder stands, right? So he is just peppering the ball, you know, over the infield, but not far enough to get in the outfield. That's where all the singles come from. So I can see him maintaining a pace above 380, above 375 into August and September. And I think there's a realistic shot he hits it. I know ball data says he's probably not going to do that for a good reason. I understand he doesn't hit the ball hard, so he's not getting a bunch of homers, a bunch of, you know, rockets that are always going to fall for hits. But I think if Arise is within sniffing distance, if he's batting 380 in August, batting 390 in August, September, I think that's when you get the Ted Williams effect. So what I mean is, when Williams hit 406 in 1941, he was going into the last two games of the season. He was batting 3.995. That would have rounded up to be 400, would go down as an official 400 season. But he said, no, I'm going to go play. And he went like 5-for-6 with two doubles, or 6-for-8 with two doubles, something Ted Williams would do, and finish the season at 406. If Arise is hitting 380 in mid-August, I think he does it. I think it's a serious take. I think he could trail off and end up hitting 350, 360, which would still be a great season, which would still lead the league. So I'm going to say serious. I think it's in the realm of possibility for him to hit 400.
I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility, obviously, but I am going to go delirious on this one. And here's the reason why. We've seen through the Statcast where he seems to just full on defy it because of the way that he hits the ball, because of the way that he's able to pepper it everywhere. And I respect the absolute hell out of it. But here's where I also see it. We've also seen that batting average dip to about 380. And while that's still absolutely incredible to have, and any hitter would be happy to have a 380 stretch here, it's shown especially with the fact that he just actually had a series against Seattle where he actually went fully hitless. First time this season had a series where he's gone hitless. But what's shown is that it's possible to stop him. It is quite possible to be able to make him hit into ground balls, to make him go into directions that are not going to work. And I have a feeling that before the end of the season, it's going to get figured out a little bit more. Yes, we know that baseball teams can no longer use the shift, which would, I think, help out with trying to take out Luis Arraez. But at the same time, he's so good that he can really beat whatever you put in front of him. But can you continue beating it long enough to make sure that you get to that 400 number? And I don't think you can. I think that it's possible, nowhere near probable. So I'm going to say delirious. I want it to happen because I think that if it does happen, that's going to bring such a huge market to baseball, especially for Miami. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Before we move on, I do want to throw it out there that Luis Arraez entering play today had a 140 line drive percentage plus. So that means he's drives at a rate 40% more than the average hitter. The only guys ahead of him, Whit Merrifield, who's having a great year in Toronto, Bo Bichette, who is probably the Silver Slugger Award winner in the American League right now, and Freddie Freeman, who is one of the best, if not the best hitter in the National League. Also, Eric Kelnick, so shout out to him. But that's production. Those are hitting at great levels. You know, the worst hitter out of that group is Whit Merrifield, and he's a 115 WRC plus guy. I think if Arise can just keep afloat long enough, you know, that's what the George Brett's of the world, the Tony Gwynn's of the world that battled 400 late season, they lost steam in, you know, August and September, and they had too much ground to make up, right? But if Arise is within shouting distance, I think he gets it.
You know, the other thing is that his batting average on balls in play is upwards of 400. And so I wonder if he can sustain that in some way, because it's not that common. I think the White Sox, Yoan Moncada had a 406 back in 2019. I believe Tim Anderson was like 399 that year, and he hit 335 and won the batting title. I know there was one year, Joey Votto, when he hit 400 in the second half in 2016, his BABIP was over 500. So it's very, very difficult to sustain that level of luck too, but he just hits it where it ain't. So the batted ball data does show that, like, all right, he could probably hit well over 300. I mean, I think he's going to cruise to another batting title. And I, as much as I would love for him to hit 400, I'd say reevaluate this in like 6 weeks or so, and then I might be more convinced that he'll hit 400.
Here's the thing, that when it comes to what you're saying, Splash, about having to for as long as you have right now, for that level to be able to hit that, just think about this for a second, that hitting 400 means that out of every 10 at-bats, you're getting four full hits. Four times that you're falling in for that. That's just the basic math of it. Now, you can get 10 at-bats probably in, let's say, two games, right? I think two, maybe a little bit more then. And being able to then, in those two games, being able to produce four hits just to stay on pace is, I think that's hard to do. And don't get me wrong, I want it to happen. But when I look at it, it's not even so much an idea of having to try to just keep up long enough. It is about having to keep going all the way into the final stretch. Like, it's like a marathon where you can't just like coast to the end. You have to finish it strong. Otherwise, you're going to lose place. And that's where I think it's going to fall for our rise, is that we are only, what, 60 games into the season or ish?
Like 70 games at this point.
70 games. So we still have a little less than 100 games left of the season. That is a long, long time to keep up something that he's barely gone over that four mark. And we need to make sure I'm just being clear about what I'm saying this as well. Anywhere near this level is incredible. But I try to reach that exact milestone, you would have to be able to keep up this pace for another 90 games. And I'm not sure how flexible it is. Let's talk about this, I think, a little bit more once we get to the All-Star. Because I think at that point, that's going to be a really good determiner. Because if he could keep it going all the way to then, and possibly all the way through July, maybe it might seem a little more realistic because then he's made it over the hump.
Do you guys know what Ted Williams was hitting through 73 games?
What's up?
Any guesses?
450.
I am letting baseball reference load. So Alex, please guess.
425.
Okay, so 425, 450 are your guesses. Batting Log says, hey, at least her sound effects work this time. Oh, my goodness. So in 41, of course, he hit 406 for the full season. But through 73 games played, that was as of July 6th, game one header with the Washington Senators, Ted Williams was hitting 399.
Oh, wow. That's closer.
Yes. But still, the fact that, yeah, he was batting under 400 at that point. You know what? I'll take that. But at the same time, still, that's Ted Williams.
This is true. But we are talking about one of the most bat-to-ball players in the history of the sport.
I agree. And like I said,
I'm
not saying
miss.
It's impossible. That I don't think it's impossible. I just don't think it's probable. I think that right now there is a decent chance that it could happen, but not a good one.
Okay, one last stat before we move on.
Yeah.
July 24th was the last day Ted Williams finished with a batting average below 400. So he finished last 70, or not quite 70 because they played shorter seasons. The last 64 games of the season, he averaged 400 or above.
Yeah, it almost makes me wonder, because, and I know this gets brought up sometimes, but if, because Tony Gwynn was hitting 394 when play stopped in 1994. I wonder if Tony Gwynn could have finished with a 400 batting average, because I feel like, and I've seen the comparison a lot between Luis Arraez and Tony Gwynn. You know, I'm curious to see what you know, and maybe Arraez can finish
I
with
would
Tony
not,
Gwynn.
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
With that, we're gonna move on to our final series. We're gonna talk about a pitcher this time, and hey, we're going to my Seattle Mariners right now. And is this a little bit of homerism? Possibly. No, we're actually going to a take that Mac had made at the beginning of the season. We were talking about different candidates for the awards, and Mac brought up a dark horse candidate of one George, sorry, pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, and he has been pitching extremely as of late. He seems to have an irrational fear of walking hitters, but will strike them out like he's nobody's business. In his last game, he struck out 10, including his very first one. We just talked about Luis Arraez. I'll give it 3 hits, 1 run that was not earned over 6 innings, dropping his ERA right up to a 3.24. Now, gentlemen, going back to Max's take, not just what I would love to hear, but to take here, serious or delusional, George Kirby wins the AL Cy Young. Serious or delirious?
Yeah, I'm going to take this one first. This is delirious. Not because of George Kirby. He might get Cy Young votes. I'm not going to dispute that. But it is such a loaded race in the American League. You have Shane McClanahan. You have the Minnesota guys, Joe Ryan, Sonny Gray. You have Garrett Cole, of course. You have the Houston guys, Christian Javier. Framber Valdez has been on fire. Nate Eovaldi down in Texas as well. And if you're even looking at Seattle starters, I don't know if Kirby's even... second, you have Luis Castillo, who is the ace of the staff, and you have Bryce Miller, who's been stellar as a rookie. I think you have two guys in Seattle that are better, you know, better threats to win it than Kirby, and that's nothing against Kirby so far in his career. 3.33 ERA across 38 starts. Nothing to scoff at there. 1.22 ERA plus this season. Some solid progression here. He's lowered his whip. He has the lowest walks per nine in the majors, the highest strikeout to walk ratio in the majors. He's threatening like Carl Pavano, Carlos Silva stuff, but it's too crowded in the American League. And Kirby is too much of a third wheel on his own staff to garner much consideration.
So here's the thing though, is that you mentioned his strikeout to walk ratio. And I mean, dude, his walk rate this year is 1.9%. That is minuscule. Which I can't believe. I don't know how to comprehend that. He's also the type of guy where he's I'd say more of an old school guy. You know, in the way that he gives up hits at like a decent rate. Like opponents get hits against him, is what I mean. He's given up 80 hits in 80 and two thirds innings. You know, it's not like he's unhittable necessarily, but he keeps guys off the bases because he doesn't walk batters, and he still gets enough strikeouts where his strikeout to walk ratio is over 11. I think he's got good enough stuff also to go on a long stretch of just dominating, you know, similar to the one that we've seen Nathan Eovaldi go on this year, or one that Jacob deGrom has gone on in the past, or Chris Sale, or Corey Kluber. I think that Kirby has what it takes to win the Cy Young. So I'm going to say this is a serious take. And while he might not even be the best pitcher on his staff right now, I think by this summer, he will be the best pitcher on the staff.
So that's what's interesting here right now. And Flash, I'm going to hardcore disagree with something you said a moment ago, that he's not even the top two starters in Seattle. As don't get me wrong, I love Bryce Miller, but he's right now competing for number three starter alongside Logan Gilbert, which Logan currently winning that race. But, and I like Miller. I really want to see him keep succeeding. I get really excited whenever I see him get the pitch. When I'm looking at Kirby, I am going to go delirious though right now. And I want it to be serious, but there are a lot of problems, but let me bring up a lot of positives as well. Currently, as of this moment, according to reference.com, he is leading the league in strikeout to walk ratio at 11.83 ratio. That is absurd. Already in his young career, he's only 25 through, what is it now, 38 games, all of them starts, he's already racked up over 200 strikeouts. He has been a threat when it comes to hitters and making sure they do not get on base. Considering that, what, a career right now strikeout to walk ratio of 7.29, where he has 204 strikeouts and 28 walks, no intentional base on balls either. Just throw that out there. Right now, I think that he does have a little bit more growing to do, but the way that he's playing right now, I love how you described it, Mac. I love that you described that he's an old school pitcher, because he very much is. He's a hard thrower who puts it in the strike zone and makes the hit work for it. You can't just take pitches from Kirby. You're going to be down 0-2 if you do that. You have to keep swinging from the word go if you even want a chance without being behind. He does not walk people. Like, there was a stretch of three games where he had one walk and people thought, dang, he started to lose his hand. I'm like, is this a what now? Wait, what are you talking about? No, the man does not walk people. The man is an incredible strikeout artist right up there with Luis Castillo. Do I think Castillo currently right now is the better pitcher? Yes. And I think that he is an incredible arm. But right now with Kirby, I think there's a chance he could do this if he keeps on this pace. But I don't think it's too likely, because also, like you said, Splash, there is so much competition in the American League pitching-wise. You brought up McClanahan. You brought up the guys from Minnesota. Like, and that's not even talking about some of the guys in the American League, right? American League West right now. Like, this very interesting race. I think he has a chance, though. But I don't think he's going to win it outright unless he continues on this path and it elevates his game even further past that. He's also, I think, the only Mariner right now with a complete game. So good on him for that. But he's an old school pitcher, does his job exceptionally well, and makes hitters earn it.
So I do have a thing to note. Kirby finishes the season with his current strikeout to walk ratio would be the major league record over Phil Hughes from back in 2009, well over 11.5. Word of caution here, the Baseball Savant page is good, not Cy Young good. He's, you know, a little bit better than average at limiting hard contact. His hard hit rate is 60th percentile. His expected ERA is 72nd percentile. Those are good. But with just allowing guys on base, allowing a lot of hits like he does, 31st percentile expected average, occasionally you're going to allow a three, right? Occasionally you're going to allow a run homer or a couple two-run homers, or occasionally. And that's the thing I worry about, that the strikeout rate is right. And of course, the walk rate is basically zero, right? So you're going to do great there, but you're still going to have some runs. And I think that's where some of those random runs he allows, some of those things of two-run ball instead of six things of one-run ball, because the strikeout rate isn't crazy. I think that's going to be the difference between, like, McClanahan finishing the season with a 2-2 ERA and finishing the season with a 3-2 ERA.
Yeah, I'm not 100% on that, because I think even most Cy Young Award winning pitchers still give up runs every now and then. That's just how baseball works. But I get what you're saying, and I understand that, because I don't think he's going to win the award. I would love it if he did. It would be absolutely ace. But also, I just noticed, what is it with Seattle loving pitchers that have a really good strikeout ratio, or just really good at striking out people, including Robbie Ray, that has not turned out well so far. Anyway, with that is good. Unless you have anything else we want to say about Kirby, then we are going to head off of Sirius or Delirium. If you guys like that, make sure to let us know on Twitter at @LAR_baseball from that, because we want to hear from you guys here. We wanted to do more of what you guys like. But speaking of something we haven't done in a little bit that we're going to get right on to right now, we're going to do the return of three words only. We've been kind of using it for just like little here or there a little bit. No, we're going to make it its full segment here. We've got three different topics we're going to talk about, and they're all themed. We're going to be talking about rookies with these three only. And three rookies that definitely have been earning a little bit of attention, shall we say. The very first one, we brought him up already earlier today. Ellie De La Cruz has been an electrifying player in baseball for the Reds. So, guys, what are your three words for Ellie De La Cruz right now? Let's start with Splash here.
My three words are De La Crush. This dude was made in a lab. He is the fastest player in baseball. He throws the ball as hard as anyone, and he hits the ball as hard as anyone. There is a joke someone made on Twitter that he and O'Neill Cruz were like the best brothers, most talented brothers in baseball. Definitely reminded me of the days of the brothers known as Chipper and Andrew Jones. For those who know, you know. But De La Cruz is just a ball of clay. waiting to smash baseballs at Great American Ballpark. As much as I hate it for the pitchers, the Lodolos, the Ashcrafts, the Greens of the world, it is the best thing for De La Cruz. It is the best thing for these other young hitters. He's going to get a lot of, I'm going to say, quote unquote, cheap home runs, even though he's going to hit up several few 450 feet, maybe even getting to Kentucky. Shout out to Adam Dunn once again. Six steals already. The Reds just won their ninth game in a row while we were recording this. I mean, what's not to like about the guy? His first 11 big leagues, he's slashing 273, 360, 432 for a 110 OPS plus. That'll play. Four extra base hits so far. He scored 10 runs in 11 games. I like what I'm seeing. I like that the walk rate is reasonable as well. That's always a good sign in a young hitter. He is striking out a lot, 34% of the time, but he's right around the league average. He's walking more than the average, and he's whacking the ball. 95% average. Over a 55% hard hit rate. And I do try he's going to raise his ground ball rate a little bit moving forward, but he's a stud.
So my three words are, oh my God. It does not get any simpler than that, in my opinion, because those were my thoughts watching him when he first got called up. And it's been my thoughts the entire season, seeing highlights of him playing in the minor leagues this year, seeing every highlight of him playing in the majors this year. This dude is just amazing, really. Vince Carter was half man, half amazing in basketball. I mean, I think that's basically Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, he runs like the freaking wind. His average foot speed this year is 30.8 feet per second. Like, what? Ed hits the ball, you know, he can hit the ball 500 feet. I mean, well, his first home run in the majors went to the very top of the right field bleachers. Like, what else is there to say? And he got from, I believe, first to home in 10 seconds or something like that, like between 10 and 11 seconds. So in addition to being able to hit the ball, you know, 115 miles per hour, he can run faster than everyone else in the majors. He can hit the ball very far. And he's a solid infielder. My only thing is, with how good this young Reds infield is, what's going to happen when Christian Encarnacion and Strand comes up? Because this team is set right now.
Yeah, right now with Ellie De La Cruz, my three words are, to borrow the words from the Mad Long Shot things from years ago, it gives the spark. Right now, this team has been absolutely electric since he made his debut back on June 6th. Just to give you kind of an idea how good the team has been since then, in those 13 games, so at the time of recording this, the team has gone 11-2. 11-2. Those two losses, one of them coming up against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the next one being against the St. Louis Cardinals. The rest of the teams they have beaten over that stretch have been taking a series against the Dodgers 2-3, taking a series against St. Louis 2-3, sweeping the Kansas City Royals in three games, and then sweeping Houston in games, and then taking the first game so far against Colorado. Now, I know that same got teams like St. Louis or Kansas City doesn't really say a whole lot, considering that both of those teams are bad right now. But when you take a look at what the teams they have done well against, it really tells the picture a little bit more. Doing really well against the Dodgers, who, while they may not be at their absolute peak right now, they're still one of the best teams in all of baseball. And the Houston Astros are the Houston Astros, still a very good team and one of the best in baseball. And they are continuing to do this. If you go back before, they get before he came up, you take a look at the last couple series that they had, it's really not great. Like, they lost they lost 3 of 4 against Milwaukee. Then they went on a good trend where they beat Boston in 3, and then had a good series against Chicago Cubs. That doesn't say a whole lot. But before that, there's a lot of L's on the ESPN schedule there. So right now, like, while I don't think fully that the Reds are the team of destiny or that they are absolutely amazing. I do think it's very possible they win the division, as we talked about earlier. But right now, this guy, Ellie De La Cruz, is the reason that this team is doing so well. One of the reasons, because he has given the spark. So, oh, you want to say something on that, Smash? Go for it.
Yeah, I will say the ground ball rate is concerning. It's over 70% right now for De La Cruz. And if we know this from Keith Brian Hayes, O'Neill Cruz, right? Even Michael Harris, Ronald Acuna do this thing. Vinny Pasquantino does this thing.
Brent Beatty, too.
Yes.
For the Mets, yeah.
Kind of have to lift just a little bit. He has a negative 2.2 degree launch angle. That's not good. That's not sustainable. It doesn't matter how fast you are, unless you are a flash, quite literally. If you are hitting a bunch of ground balls to major league caliber infielders, you're not going to get too many hits, especially when you're hitting them as hard as De La Cruz does.
Yeah, and that's 100% fair. And I think that's, you know, he does have to work on a few different things, but he's still been one of the main reasons why the Reds have done as well as they have. The next person we're going to talk about is a guy who made his debut. Congratulations to one Henry Davis for the Pirates. He is a catcher outfielder playing a bunch of different positions, but just made his debut for the Pirates. So guys, about Davis, what are your three words regarding this rookie?
So I think this is my three words are sort of more like for the Pirates, the impact of his call-up, which is turn things around. The reason I say this is because we've seen the Pirates have been very inconsistent this year. They were 20-8. Then they did a lot of losing. They went 6-19. Then they went on a bit of a win streak, and now they're on another losing streak. I think calling up Henry Davis, who is supposed to be a spark plug, sort of like De La Cruz. He's a catcher who's playing right field today. He was the first overall pick out of Louisville for a reason. I think that he could help them turn things around. You know, this is a young team. I don't necessarily think this is their year, but, you know, down the line, the Pirates and Reds are going to battle for this division. They are easily the two most exciting teams in the division, in my opinion. I think with Davis coming up, I think the Pirates can maybe find a little bit of a groove again. Like I said, I don't necessarily expect them to win the division or make the playoffs, but this team is taking steps forward this year, and they're following the Reds' lead in calling up their young players. So I'm very excited to see what Henry Davis can do in the majors. Really, really liked what I saw out of him in the minors this year. So, yeah, I think he can help the Pirates right the ship. No pun intended.
I'm going to go, I guess, in a slightly different direction. So my three words are, will he catch? And I say that because, you know, he started today as a right fielder. He played some right field in the minors, and he is 23. You know, he's going to turn 24 until September. And I do wonder if the Pirates are going to opt to let Davis just get major league at bats, have him DH, have him play in the outfield while they have the veteran catchers, you know, call games for the likes of Rich Hill and this, you know, more veteran pitching staff. And I do wonder if that maybe hinders his development, or hopefully it doesn't hinder his development. Hopefully he's, you know, perfectly fine to be the day one backstop for the next 10, 12 years. But it does make you wonder, there are other teams that, like the Royals with MJ Melendez, because they want to play Salvi some, because, you know, he's a team icon. And it does make me wonder, does it stunt your growth when you're playing in the outfield, because you're not catching every day, you're not learning the pitchers as much as you would if you're a catcher. But it's one of those teams that does care about catcher defense. I would imagine they don't have any concerns with Davis's defense, but maybe you just trust the Austin Hedges of the world a little bit more. So I think he's going to end up playing a lot more outfield than one would think for drafting a catcher now overall.
See, I went a little bit snarky with my three words. I put gets MLB time. that's just kind of what's going to happen here. I don't think that what's going to happen with the Pirates, considering the division that they're in and considering the rise right now of the Reds, I don't think they're going to get that huge spark. I think that's almost what they are kind of hoping from Drew Maggi earlier, that just didn't work. And yes, I know that trying to compare players like Drew Maggi and Henry Davis is kind of like comparing apples and oranges. But at the same time right now, I think this is mostly just trying to get him some MLB time because they know that they have a core that they're working around right now. This is the stages of the rebuild. Well, sorry, the mid stages of the rebuild where the rookies are starting to come up, are starting to play pretty well in the major leagues right now. Just want to get him that MLB time. Do I think it's going to push this year? No, I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think what's good at the very least is that they're taking that time where they know they're probably not going to win it all and are turning it into getting their young guy who is ready for the leagues and getting him the time that he needs to settle in. Like we've seen time and time again with a bunch of players in baseball that the rookie comes and needs time to get ready. Look at Jared Kelnick. Look at a lot of other players in baseball. And I like that they're using this time to let him get ready. Let him get used to being on a major league diamond. Like we've all seen before that there is a huge jump in level of play between AAA and the big leagues. And that is something that is going to, that is very obvious to see from how you see a lot of rookies go forward. Ellie De La Cruz definitely is a bit of an anomaly at that. So, if there's anything else left here, we do have one more three words to get to. Especially, you want to say something, Monk?
Yeah, I was going to just mention that both Austin Hedges and Jason DeLay are two of the better framers in baseball. So, if you're the Pirates, maybe you don't play Henry Davis much as maybe you're okay with taking the, I don't want to say automatic out because that's a little disrespectful, automatic sacrifice bunt for Austin Hedges out of your 8 or 9 hole. You might be okay with that because you're going to save a couple of runs here of framing.
You know, I will say that to sort of the Splash's point about Davis's defense, the thing is he stole 9 bases in the minors this year and stole 10 bases his junior year at Louisville. I think that he doesn't quite have the range necessarily to be an outfielder, in my opinion. I mean, I'm just thinking about other catchers who've been converted into outfielders, like Kyle Schwarber. Although Bryce Harper converted pretty well to being an outfielder. Davis has a great arm, but I don't think necessarily the outfield is his calling card. So I do see him behind the plate going forward. I think the Pirates, you know, he can be their answer to what Francisco Alvarez is in New York, I think.
I mean, also, kind of to your point, Splash, and I know we've gone back and forth about this, framing is only a stat because umpires need to be better. I love
how I want not entirely wrong.
Yeah, well, it's not wrong at all. Anyway, let's move on to our last three words only here as we are going to talk about in the American League. Now, Gunnar Henderson. Is that a bit more of a resurgence after a bit of a disappointing start to the year? Fellas, what are your three words about Gunnar Henderson?
So my three words are the magic is back. Because last year when the Orioles called up Gunnar Henderson, he looked pretty good and looked ready to rock and roll. And now we are seeing that again. Just a great month of June so far, hitting .364 with an 1119 OPS, 5 home runs already. You look at his Baseball Savant page, and he's got a lot of red. I mean, he's drawing plenty of walks. He's hitting the ball pretty well, I would say. I mean, he's averaging 91.6 miles per hour on his exit velocity. You know, his launch angle is way up from last year, which I like. His expected stats, for the most part, are better. And, I mean, like I said, 13.5% walk rate, that'll play. He's sort of been like a 3 true outcomes player in some ways, but his OPS is actually now higher than it was last year. So the Orioles have been great this year, and Gunnar Henderson is a huge part of their future. So I'm happy to see that he is performing well. And I think that with him and Adley Rutschman leading the way, the Orioles are going to be a team to watch not only just this year. They have a very, very bright future ahead for them.
Yeah, Gunnar Henderson has been a pleasant surprise. He finally made our AL Rookie of the Year ladder, which is great to see. But my three words are baby birds thrive. Yes, sir. The Orioles have been one of the better stories in baseball this year, and a lot of that is their young talent. at least not on the mound. We're going to ignore Grayson Rodriguez. Our sincerest condolences. Dave Rutschman playing like an all-star. Austin, he's good at baseball. Gunnar Henderson balling out right now. And you just have this, you know, this plethora of hitting talent up and down the lineup. You have Cedric Mullins, although he is on the IL right now. And I think with Henderson, you have a lot of room to grow. And it's a very encouraging baseball savant page. He hits the ball. He walks a lot. He has a good arm. So maybe he doesn't, maybe he's not an elite third baseman or an elite shortstop, but he's a serviceable one, in my opinion. And the plate discipline is going to stand out. And as a, in his, you know, his first real taste of Major League Baseball, a 90th percentile walk rate, 79th percentile chase rate, 83rd percentile sprint speed, 84th percentile barrel rate. All of these things are his things. His, both of his ex-WOBA charts are going crazy in the red right now. He hits the ball hard. He has a nice sweet spot rate. His expected WOBA is at 347, which is above Major League average by a decent amount. So he's cooking, and I think the Orioles are one of those teams that I think they can hold on to their playoff spot. They need better pitching. Of course, this is a trade deadline potential that, hey, you go out and get a insert name here. But the baby birds, they're birding right now.
I like that a lot.
Bird is the word.
The bird is the word. I have been told that before. All right, for mine, I have not the spotlights. At the beginning of the season right now, Gunnar Henderson was, I think, one of the biggest stories in baseball, as well as, you know, with amongst the Orioles specifically. But we kind of just knew that, okay, well, it's his time to be the spotlight. When Adley Rutschman came up, he was the spotlight. We've seen other players get the spotlight too, but then he started to flounder in that spotlight. And so the story went to other places. Story went to, first it was Adley, then it was Jorge Mateo, and it was Cedric Mullins. And now that he hasn't been in the spotlight, that's when he's been thriving better. Like, we've seen it really start to get things going again now when the story hasn't been primed around him. So right now, I think that especially if this team could continue putting it all together as a full unit, where Gunnar Henderson is not the guy they need to be fully relying on, then I think right now there's a very good chance he could be even better, and I think he can continue on this growth bit. But you guys were talking a lot about what his savant pages have been telling us, and you know what? I don't see any reason why it's going to go down, especially if this Orioles team continues on its upward trend. If it doesn't, though, I think there may be a little more trouble for him if they have to keep on relying on him. But with that being said, any of the last notes we want to have on Gunnar Henderson? Yep, I think we're good to go here. So that was our segment of three words only. What are your three words for any of these electric rookies? Make sure, again, go drop us a message or a tweet using our handle of @LAR_baseball. But now it is time for trivia, our much always anticipated segment. And for trivia, I'm going to hand things off to one Ryan Splash Potts.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 2 of the Chain Game. So today, today we're going with a little bit of a simpler topic. Last week, you can check that out on last week's episode. Last week, we tried teammate chain game. So you named a player. Let's say their initials were A, B. The next player you had to name, be a teammate of player A, B, and have first name start with a B. Today, we're going to go with a little bit simpler, a little bit easier, a little bit more axe players. I have a deck of baseball cards that my grandmother got when she was in Florida a couple months ago. I'm going to cut the cards, and I'm going to read off a name. And when I read off the name, I will also reveal the category today. The player we have is one Randy Reddy, who is an infielder for the Philadelphia Phillies. To follow Mr. Randy, you must choose a player who made the All-Star team. That's the all-in qualifier today. Had to have made an All-Star team. So this disqualifies anyone from before 1933. Alex, you are above me on the Zoom. Mac, you are below me on the Zoom. Heads or tails? Serious thinking. My apologies. Jose, get better, buddy.
Come on.
What do you mean working on that?
How are you how working are you, on a coin flip?
How are you working on a
here,
coin flip?
I got here. I got it.
Right, it's right heads. Here. Okay. Okay, Alex, you may go first or you may defer to one Mac.
I'll go first, but so anyone who's ever been on an all-star team with the last name of R?
First name of R. Randy Ready.
Okay, cool. Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson, I will verify, is a correct answer. Randy Johnson was a 10-time All-Star, if Baseball Reference with low, could tell you who he was an All-Star on. This is a really horrible segment for a podcast.
Yeah, we are having some trouble, but it is okay.
A 5-time All-Star with the Seattle Mariners, 5-time All-Star with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mac, your letter is J, your topic is ours.
Okay, I'm going to go with a painful one for me. Jason Bay.
I was thinking the same one.
Jason, he is not your Bay, I believe is a correct answer. He definitely did not with the Metropolitans.
He didn't do a lot of things with the Mets.
Yeah, that's a good point. He did win a rookie, not with the Mets. He was a 3-time All-Star, twice with the Irate Pirates, and once with the Boston Red Sox.
Bo Sox.
Alex, your letter is B as in basketball.
B as in basketball. I'm pretty sure he made an All-Star team. I'm going to go with Bob Gibson.
Bob Gibson, a pretty standard answer. I'm assuming you want the one that played from 1959 to 1975.
Yeah, that is exactly the one I want. Yeah. Okay.
Boston was a time All-Star. Of course, all of them came with the Redbirds.
Mm-hmm.
Mac, your letter is G.
All right, I'm going to do a risky one here because I can't remember if he actually made an All-Star game. But I know he had one amazing year at the plate. So I'm going to go with Gary Matthews Jr.
Gary Matthews Jr., an MLB Power Pros legend.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say Greg Gonzalez, and I was about to be really happy.
thank you for specifying the Gary Matthews, because there are two, in fact.
Yes, sorry.
He is a one-time All-Star.
Exactly, I knew it.
The All-Star team in 2006 with the Texas Rangers. If you want to know more about the mid-2000s Texas Rangers, please refer to our last episode of this.
Or Alex, please don't. Or please do not. As I got cooked playing this game.
This is true. Alex, your letter is M.
Yeah. We're going to go with one Mark McGwire.
Mark McGwire. Actually, this is a good time to mention. I forgot to say the rules for this. Three strikes and you're out. We will be instituting the four ball rule. If you name a player with a double name, so Mark McGwire, double M, you get a ball. So congratulations, Alex. You have the same number of balls as Mitch Haniger.
Dude, what the hell?
I'm confused
that is
now.
So mean. What the hell?
So wait,
okay.
I'm confused.
You have one. Okay, if you get four balls, you can remove a strike.
Oh, that is okay. The rule. I understand now. Okay. So all right. So you went with Mark McGwire. So I go with an M now too. All right.
Yes, you go with an M. Mark McGwire was a 12-time All-Star. 9 times with the A's. 3 times with the Cardinals.
3 times with the Cardinals. All right, I got you. Okay. I am thinking of one right now. I think this guy made one. I'm going to go with former closer Mike Williams.
Mike Williams. Thankfully, there's only one Mike Williams.
Pirates and Phillies closer.
Yes, he is a 2-time All-Star, an All-Star with the Pirates twice. Alex, back to you. The letter is W.
Okay. I have one idea, but I don't remember if he actually played in an All-Star game, though. That's what I'm trying to remember.
I mean, for clarification, they don't actually have to play in said All-Star games.
Well, no, it's not making it. Yeah, no, it's just making it. Okay. I'm gonna go with William Contreras.
William Contreras, I know, made the All-Star team last year with the 2022 Braves.
He started.
Congratulations, buddy.
We'll see. W name was hard. I'm just gonna be real with you.
Yeah. All right, Mac, over to you with C as in Contreras.
Okay, I appreciate the the help there.
It could be K as in Contreras.
I think this guy made the All-Star game, but you'll have to double check. Obviously, Charlie Huff.
Charlie Huff, known for being the last 42-year-old to throw a hit, a 9 shutout. Huff was a one-time All-Star.
Yes, let's go. I know my stuff.
With the 1986 Texas Rangers.
Yep.
Alex, your letter is H.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm like. H is an interesting letter.
Did you know that Charlie Huff is from Hawaii?
I did not.
Yes.
So Honolulu, for those of you that remember the last podcast, I said I very much associate baseball players with last names, not with first names. So this is having trouble because the first name that popped into my mind was Trevor Hoffman. I'm like, wait a minute.
That would not be a valid answer.
That would not be a valid answer. Okay. So honestly, I'm just trying to think of like first names that start with H, and Splash, you are just dying over there. I see you.
I actually can't think of an HH right now, which is that's my game I'm trying to play with myself.
Fair enough. I don't remember if this guy actually made it, but I know he had a torrent go for a little bit. Harrison Bader,
the master. Yankees legend, Cardinals legend, a zero-time All-Star.
Dang it. All right, that's my first strike.
All right, you do have one ball, though.
Yeah.
Mac,
one ball,
we will
one
continue
strike.
With HB, so your player to name begins with a B.
Begins with a B. Okay, I have to do some thinking on this. I got one. Brandon Webb.
Brandon Webb, owner of one of the highest ERA pluses in the history of Major League Baseball, is a correct answer. He was a 3 All-Star, of course, all coming with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Let's go.
Alex, your letter is, once again, W.
So, did I say William Contreras last time, right?
Yes, you said yes. William. If you say Wilson, okay. Contreras...
Thinking about so it. Just,
yeah, yes, okay. Yes, Wilson Contreras is the correct Contreras. Answer.
Yeah.
They both made the All-Star team last year. They both started Contreras. They're both named Contreras. You're an idiot. Wilson started at catcher. William started at DH. Wilson, the Cardinals catcher now, is a 3-time All-Star, all with the Cubs. Mac, your letter is once again C as in Contreras.
Okay.
And Alex, I do want to fight you.
I'm aware, but I don't care. I'm winning that fight every day of the week.
Incorrect.
Nope.
Incorrect.
Right.
You're wrong on this one.
I'm going to go.
Court into a King's Court again, buddy.
Let's do it.
I'm going to go with Carlos Santana.
Carlos Santana, a legend of many teams, including the Irate Pirates and the Mariners. Mm-hmm. Carlos Santana actually once
also
participated
a great guitarist.
In Home Run Derby. Yes. Oh, there you go. Is a 1-time All-Star with the 2019
exactly.
Cleveland, at the time, redacteds.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep.
Alex, your letter is S.
I don't even need to take too much longer on this one. I'm pretty sure I know one off the top of my head. Sean Casey?
Sean Casey, Reds legend, Tigers
one?
Legend.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Sean Casey was not the S name I was thinking of, thinking about to say when you were very confident in that answer. He was a 3-time All-Star, all of them, with the Cincinnati Reds.
Okay.
Mac, it is your turn, buddy. Your letter is once again C. Is
I am making
Contreras
you run out of
time.
All the C names.
There's
all
a lot
right.
of there's a lot more C
I'm,
names.
I'm aware.
Three,
I'm
aware.
Gonna
go I'm with,
just
I'm gonna go with Carlos Beltran.
Mr. Carlos Beltran. Astros legend, Mets legend, Yankees legend, Cardinals legend, Royals legend. He was a 9-time All-Star, should be a future Hall of Famer. Was an All-Star with the Kansas City Royals, New York Mets, St. Louis Cardinals, and New York Yankees. Alex, your letter is B as in bozo.
All right, so I may actually get another ball in this one. I'm just trying to remember if he actually made an All-Star team. I'm 99% he did, but I'm just trying to remember if he actually did or not. And I'm going to go with it because at this point now we're also running out of time. I'm going to go with one Mr. Country of Breakfast, Billy Butler.
Billy Butler, again, not the name I was expecting you to name.
My birthday buddy.
I actually got in an argument on our account, Billy Butler, because I called Pasquantino the Italian breakfast. But Billy Butler, a one-time...
Let's go!
Oh, my God. Wow.
For Alex, word to George Kirby. Your letter is B there, Mac. B is in
okay.
Balls.
All right. I'll have to...
We're having a great time.
I have to do some thinking on this one because I'm... Oh, man. I think this guy made an All-Star game. Brian Harvey?
You guys do realize you can choose, you know, baseball players we know and love?
Yeah, Brian Harvey.
That's why I'm choosing him.
his son plays in the majors right now.
Hunter Harvey. Yes, Nationals reliever.
Exactly.
Brian Harvey made the All-Star game twice, 1991 California Angels, 1993 expansion Florida Marlins. Also had an infinite ERA in 1995. He has to be one of the only guys in history with both a zero ERA and an infinite ERA. At your turn, the letter is H as in Hasselhoff.
Nice. Thank you. I'm gonna be real. I am running out of H names. Because the only H names, just for clarify, the only H names that are coming to my mind right now are like Harry and Harrison, or Hunter, I guess.
Harrison Bader is not a correct answer
anymore. He isn't.
until he impulsively
voted
in.
I'm trying to remember. I know there's a Hunter that has made it at some point. And oh, wait, actually, I might have it. Hunter Strickland?
No, I was thinking of a different one.
Okay. I know you were.
Hunter Strickland, Bryce Harper's son. Happy Father's Day, by the way. He's a 2-time World Series champ, but a 0-time All-Star.
Dude, there was a layup right there, and you completely missed. You airballed.
I mean, just like you when I play you in the show, but that's okay.
Oh, cool. Get out of here. Please get anyway. All right,
so here's the standing. Alex has 2 balls and 2 strikes. Mac has 0 balls, 0 strikes. And he is facing the letter S, as in Strickland.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the clarification there, Splash. It's much appreciated.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go with... new Hall of Famer, Scott Rolen.
Scott Rolen, Blue Jays legend, of course, definitely played for some other teams that don't really matter as much. Jasper, Indiana native, 7-time All-Star. He made the All-Star team with the Philadelphia Phillies, St. Louis Cardinals a bunch, and the Cincinnati Reds. Alex, back to you. The letter is R, as in Ryan.
Yes, it is. Okay. Ours a lot should be a lot easier. Now it's just about me trying to make sure I put one together. And I'm pretty sure I have one here, but now after everything, now I'm contradicting myself. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with you know what? I'm pretty sure he's been one. Robbie Ray.
Robbie Ray. At one point in time, the all time in strikeouts per 9 innings, a 60-day IL stint will not stop the time All-Star. He did it with the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2017.
That's also my third ball.
By the way, ball
third
three.
Ball, congratulations. Yeah. All right, Mac.
Full count your for time, you, buddy. By the way. 3-2.
Yes.
All right, so I have an R2. I'm going to go with not Elvis Presley, but Ryan Presley.
Ryan Presley, the man who made me a lot of money in a fantasy league once. The GOAT, I call him because of that. They can lick my balls, by the way. He's a 2-time MLB All-Star participant. He made the All-Star game in 2019 and 2021 with the Houston Astros. Alex, your letter is P, as in Presley.
All right, this one's easy right now. I'm just going to get right onto this one. The Panda, Pablo Sandoval.
Pablo Sandoval, I mean Pablo Sanchez, Braves legend, a 21 World Series champion. Pablo Sandoval is a two-time All-Star, a four-time World Series champion.
I remember in that All-Star game. It went against hit a triple in an All-Star game, which is one of the funniest
things I've seen. Braves legend, by the way. 69 games plus 21 with the Bravos.
Nice.
Mac, your letter is S, as in Sandoval.
All right. I'll go with Sandy Alcantara.
The Sandman, I know he was one of those weird ones. The bad All-Star game, or the bad All-Star, because you have that weird rule with the one All-Star for every team. But Sandy Alcantara, well, yes, but he's a two-time All-Star.
Yeah.
One deserving, one not so deserving.
Yeah, one was because the team was bad.
Yes. So, Alex, your letter is A as in Alex.
Yeah, I'm just going to go. I'm going to rip the bandaid off real quick. Alex Rodriguez.
Thank you for picking a reasonable one for once. Mac, your letter is R. We all know A-Rod made several All-Star games. By several, I mean 14 of them.
Oh, boy. This is actually getting tough. Ryan Sandberg.
The Rhino, I would hope he made the All-Star game in 1984.
Well, he made the Hall of Fame. I mean,
I don't. That's not a prerequisite. You could have chosen, like, a guy from the 1900s, and they never made an All-Star game. Ryan Sandberg made 10 All-Star games. Your letter is S. Alex, S is in Sandberg.
Salvador Perez.
Salvador Perez was on that 2015 Royals team that had all the All-Stars. He is a correct answer. Mac, your letter is P as in Perez.
Oh, man.
That'll be seven-time All-Star, by the way.
I think this guy made an All-Star game, Phil Nevin.
Phil Nevin, Angels manager Phil Nevin. If I could type correctly. Do you guys see the clip of John Boy interviewing Aaron Boone about his career hitting in three ball, one strike counts?
Oh, not that one. No, I've not.
That was pretty funny. Phil Nevin, a one-time All-Star. Alex, your letter is N as in Nevin.
As in Nevin. Okay. Number of N names I'm just kind of going through right now. I'm going to go with one of my favorite N's. I'm pretty sure this one, that is going to be one Nelson Cruz.
Hey, thank you. I was just clicking on his name so it would load a little bit faster.
Good job.
A seven-time All-Star, Nelson.
Yeah, he's a good
Cruz.
Boy.
Your letter is C as in Contreras. Mac.
Again. All right, I'll go with one of your favorite players, I bet. Charlie Morton.
Mr. Curveball himself, Mr. Get Dotted Up by Five Runs Against the Rockies for No Reason. The World Series champion, Charlie Morton, is a two-time All-Star.
Okay. Max. So it's M, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Max Scherzer.
Mad Max is correct. I don't really need to verify that one. Mac, back to you. The letter is S as in Scherzer.
All right, I'll go with the one that I'm pretty sure I voted for many times when he was on the final vote ballot, Steve Delabar.
Scherzer was an 8-time All-Star, and you said Steve Delabar?
Yes, hey, Steve Delabar. I know for a fact he made the All-Star game because I voted for him in the final vote back when that was a thing.
Okay. Steve, it gave Carlton. I wish you had just said Steve Carlton. That would have been a correct answer. My baseball reference is having a issue. Come on. I can't even do this for the bit. What's the first letter of Steve's last name? D?
D.
D as in Delabar.
Ah, okay. That was not how I was going to spell that. One Steve Delabar.
Pretty sure he made that team.
Is correct. Yeah, is a one-time All-Star.
Yeah, exactly. At City Field. Yeah.
All right.
Alex.
Yeah, D. Strange Gordon.
D. Gordon the man who hit the most legendary home run I have ever witnessed in my entire existence.
100%.
Yep,
also,
I agree.
Once stood in the batter's box with the wrong way, which is the most beautiful image of all time. Two-time All-Star. Mac, we're going to do S as your letter here, as in strange, Gordon.
Oh, God. Okay. I'll go with Steven Strasburg. I'll take ball one.
All right. Mr. Juan Soto just swaggerly looking at ball one. I don't even know if swaggerly is a word. I hope it is. Three star for Strauss.
Okay.
Alex, you're still in a full count.
Yep. Sean Green.
The man, the myth, lots of homers in one game, Sean Green. Is
it's got to be correct. Mets legend.
Yeah,
by
I
the
would
way.
Imagine it's correct. I just my keyboard is having an aneurysm. Oh, yeah, he's an all-star.
Okay,
your letter is G, as in green. Two-time all-star.
Okay.
To give you a little bit of more, to give you just a moment of extra time here, Mac, I think just for the length of the podcast, we've already gone way over from this. If you get this right, we'll say that you win via strikes. But even that, even if you don't get via strikes, so let's let you flex for a second.
All right, yeah. Let me. I gotta think of a G name. Oh, I got an easy one. Gary Carter, obviously.
There you go.
Expos legend Gary Carter.
1986 World Series champion.
We're not going to talk about that.
He was an 11-time All-Star.
Won two All-Star game MVPs. So congratulations based on not forfeit, but timing. You grab the dub. Alex.
I did better this time.
You got to a 3-2 count. There you go.
I did better
this
time.
You got to a 3-2 count.
I battled.
Yeah. We actually made a rule for you to help you.
I didn't even use it. Both of
you.
I didn't even use it.
There you go.
So you can't tell me
you
made it to help me out.
George Kirby would be proud of you because you didn't walk.
Exactly.
All right. I apologize for that.
I mean, I'm so mad at you about the Mitch Haniger comment you made earlier.
Was that not hilarious, though?
No, it's sad. Because also he's out for the rest of the year with a broken arm now.
Okay, that is true.
Man. Yeah, I forgot about that.
You can't say anything, and this fight now is about to get even more real while I'm in the parking lot.
Dominion.game.com right after this.
There's
buddy.
No .com. There's no .com.
Okay.
You Dominion.games. Right,
you are going to get King escorted to Felix Hernandez playing for the Braves for 15 years, buddy.
I'm about to mute you right now, but thank you so much, Splash, for putting together the trivia for us. But now it's time for our follow-up, as we like to end every podcast with the moment to ourselves, where we take a let's talk about whatever's on our minds. It can be baseball related, but does not have to be. So, who would like to get us started for today? Splash, you are already raising your hand. You are ready to go.
Yeah, one might say I'm Randy ready.
3, 2, 1, begin.
Randy Reddy, Doug Jones, Tapani, Jarrett's, Mike Socha, Todd, Greg Meyer, Billy Hatcher, Wally Joyner, Manuel Lee, Greg Gagne, someone in Game 6 of the 92 World, Dave Winfield, Rick Dempsey, Devon White, Brian Holman, Jim Abbott, Flint Legend, Carmelo Castillo, Tim Cruz, Eddie Murray, Rafael Ramirez, Lance Blankenship, Sid Bream, to the plate, Mackie Sasser, Joel Skinner, Sid Fernandez, Steve Avery, Kirby Puckett, Jose Canseco, Edgar Martinez, Damian Easley, Paul Molitor, Kevin Rogers, Mark Lewis, Paul Molitor again, Chuck Knobloch, Todd Stottlemyre, Bobby Thigpen, Brian McCrae, Darren Fletcher, Manny Alexander, Dan Plesac, Paul Molitor again, Bob Welch, Roger McDowell, Randy Valverde, Chris Sabo, Tim Nannerling? Is that an N? Bro, and then they call him Tim on the back. What is this? Ray Langford, Hal Morris, and Ray Langford again. Those are names we probably will never say on the podcast again, but shout out to them.
So we won't be saying Kirby Puckett's name in this?
How often do we talk about the Twins? Because I veto it if we ever talk about the 91 World Series.
You don't get to veto anything anymore. You've lost your powers on that. Anyway, Mac, would you like to go to would you like me to go next?
you go next because I still got to gather my thoughts.
Sounds good. All right. I will start in 3, 2, 1, begin. So right now, I've been thinking a lot of work on self-improvement, and I'm not sure how well it's working. Trying. And that's honestly all that I get myself to do at this point right now, because at this point, I feel like if I stop trying, things are only going to get worse overall. But, and honestly, to be fair, that's almost a more powerful motivator than anything else I've had, which is kind of cool to have that idea of, hey, you know what? You're the one that's keeping yourself accountable. You are the one that is telling you doing things. And you know what? That's empowering. I like having that mentality of, that is some mark that I'm showing progress, is that for one of the first times in a while, I'm the one that's pushing myself to do better. I'm the one that's pushing myself to get into a better place. And you know what? That's a really strong thing to have. And for anyone that's going through that as well right now, hey, you've got my respect and you've got my blessing. Keep working on you. You're the best one and the only one of you have. All right, Max. So now it's on to you. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to rock.
All right, let's see it. 3, 2, 1, big.
So when I got a break from baseball over the weekend, I did something that I enjoy doing quite often. I got to compete, actually. I went and raced in New Jersey, and I wouldn't say surprised with my results, but I did better than I expected, considering I was not rested for this competition at all, and I was pretty beat up, I won't lie, but something about competing, you know, gives me extra motivation when I, you know, get out of bed every morning. And I feel like this goes for basically everything I do in life, which is I need to have some type of like end goal in sight. And, you know, this is why I, you know, if I didn't compete still, I probably wouldn't swim still, and I probably wouldn't work out as much still. So I think it's always good to have, you know, a goal for yourself, or to set goals for yourself. So I look forward to competing again in a few weeks, and yeah, it's just a fun time.
Oh, I 100% agree. Being able to compete is a really cool feeling. I love that too. But you know what? That's our show for today. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Make sure you go follow all of us on Twitter. You can go follow me at TheSportsGuy242. You can go follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. You can also go follow Mac at Matthias_A_K. Make sure you go follow our Twitter at LAR_baseball. We've been putting out a ton of really good stuff out there lately, trying to talk about a lot of baseball topics, and it has been a good time. Make sure you especially follow us for all of our ranking updates and all that fun stuff. But for all of us here at Losses Above Replacement, I want to thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and hope to see you all real soon. Thank you.